Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hills, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm John Harwood, in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Millions of little boys dream of playing in the NFL, of running onto the field for Monday Night Football, making a goal line tackle, catching a touchdown pass. I used to be one of them. But John Moffitt is one of the few who made it, starring in the Big Ten, blocking for Peyton Manning on the Denver Broncos. Then he didn't want to do it anymore. Midway through last season, his third, he quit. He had lost his passion and his million-dollar contract. Hasn't been easy. This hour on Point, one player's story on walking away from the NFL. You can join us on air or online. Can you imagine walking away from the NFL? Have you abandoned one of your own dreams? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Later this hour, we'll hear about a new all-female talk show on sports, We Need to Talk. But joining me first from Seattle is former NFL offensive guard John Moffitt, who played for the Seattle Seahawks as well as the Broncos. John Moffitt, welcome to On Point.
Hi, John. Thank you for having me.
So 1 year later, how are you doing?
Doing good. It was a very transitional year as I look back on it, and that's the way I'd refer to it. A lot happened and a lot of changes in my life, but big transition for me.
What was the hardest part of the transition?
I think just overall the lifestyle change. I think part of me knew it would be a lifestyle change, and then the other part of me didn't realize completely that, you know, it would be thrust upon me more. There were certain things that I just couldn't do that I did in the NFL. And so I think that whole lifestyle change, the unforeseen and the foreseen things were the most difficult as far as the transition goes.
Well, when you talk about a lifestyle change, I'm imagining that that playing football has been woven into your life from when? Seven?
Eight years old is when I started playing tackle football.
And you played all the way through school. Where'd you go to high school? And tell me about your high school experience.
I went to Notre Dame of West Haven, which was an all-boys Catholic school in Connecticut, right outside of New Haven. And played football there, and then from there went to the University of Wisconsin.
Were you highly recruited?
Yes.
And
yeah. Most schools on the East Coast, and then most of the Big Ten schools.
Now you're what, 6'4", 300 some mm-hmm. pounds? How soon in your life did you get big and were able to be physically dominant on a football field? Was that from the beginning, or did you grow into your full or something approaching your full size only in high school?
Just literally the day I was born, just came out this size and fully developed and
right.
matured. And I think it's a process. In high school, I was probably like, you know, when I was at my full, I was like 6'4", 270. And when you get to college, they really put a lot of weight on you. And that's when you kind of become more of that prototypical football player body.
Right. So you were able to be physically dominant from the get-go in high school. And then.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because I was always large. I was probably, you know, when I was eight, I was definitely one of the bigger kids always throughout my entire career, you know.
Did you have heroes in football at that time? Were there people, particular players who stood out to you as like, I want to be that guy?
Not really. You know, I never really came up as a football fan, like a big, you know, fan where I watched a lot of football and I watched a lot of guys, you know. I was very into like movies and martial arts and stuff. I think if I had a hero, it would be like Bruce Lee when I was a kid, not necessarily a football hero.
Did you even have a team?
Yeah, the Jets, just because Connecticut, New York Jets. My dad was a Jets fan, loved Joe Namath.
All right, I want to go back and play a clip from after you were coming out of Wisconsin, playing in the Big Ten, which, of course, is big-time football. This is in 2011, before draft day, and John Moffitt was talking about his style of play in this video for the Seattle Seahawks.
I'm an intense football player. I play with a lot of passion. I'm versatile. I can play all three interior positions. I'm physical. I'm ready to play right away. And I love the game. I like that it's a complete challenge. It's a physical challenge, and it's also a mental challenge. It's like violent chess. I like how that works, like the dichotomy of it. You have to read the defense first, and you could literally read something, see something, make an adjustment, and, you know, 0.5 seconds later be hitting somebody.
Okay, I love the game. Tell me what happened in the pretty short period of time from 2011 when you said that to 2013 when you decided to walk away.
I think a lot of stuff happened. I think the NFL game is a much different game than the college game.
How
you
know, so?
That was a college John Moffitt talking about an NFL, perspectively an NFL business that I wasn't fully, you know, experienced in. I didn't.
Tell me how it's different.
Well, I think it's a business. It really is a business. You're doing it now for money. And I think that changes the dynamic. I think it changes it with everyone as far as the way you approach the game, the way the game is played, also some of the politics involved in the game. It changes it. And to an extent, I had really, through injuries and through kind of a lot of back and forth with my old team with the Seahawks and problems that I had, I really lost the passion over the 3 years. And it kind of wore on me, you know?
The reason I asked about the difference was I went to college at Duke a long time ago. We had a medium football program at that time. We're doing pretty well right now. But a lot of my fraternity brothers were scholarship football players. And those guys always were different from everyone else in that they had a full-time job. And the ones the for all but a handful who did go on and play in the NFL – they were all overjoyed when they got to the end of their senior season because all of the work, all of the lifting, all of the practices was over. But it sounds as if that kind of moment didn't hit you until you were a professional.
Yeah, because I guess I still had more time on my career, you know, and I was still in the game and still playing, and I expected to do more. I didn't see the work as being necessarily over. But I do know that feeling of relief. That's kind of the feeling I had right around the time I retired, where I was like, all right, the work is done. I'm kind of, you know, I never have to do this style of work again, because it gets old on a lot of levels, physically, mentally, emotionally. I think it takes a toll. And I think you made an excellent point. It's a full-time job from the time you step into college, especially if you're in a Division I program.
How would you assess how you did as a pro football player? Were you playing well? Were you injured a lot of the time and therefore weren't able to play?
Yeah, I mean, I had my rookie year, I was starting first 8 games, and then I blew my knee out. And after that, it was kind of like a back and forth my second year, in and out, sometimes based on my knee, sometimes based on coaching decisions. But it was, and then my third year I got traded to Denver. So I had an okay career. I was a good player. But I never really, the knee injury, did not help me out. And then also being traded and kind of just probably never reached my full playing potential, but I kind of lost that desire through it all anyway. So it didn't really matter to me.
Did you feel as if, physically, if you set aside the issues of whether you like to play anymore, physically, despite the knee injury, were you still capable of playing a good number of years longer?
Possibly. I think the NFL, I mean, that's a toss-up for everybody that decides to play. You can't say how long you're going to play the game because you just don't know. One play can end your career. I once I lost the passion, the thing that really came in perspective to me was what the toll I was taking on my body, some of the things that I was starting to hear about the concussion research and CTE. And I just, When the passion was gone, it just became a cost-benefit analysis, and it just wasn't worth it.
I'm assuming that every player who plays on the interior line has suffered multiple concussions. Is that true of you? And do you anticipate having problems of that kind related to damage to your brain?
Well, I think the problem with concussions is the way that it's defined to players and really to everyone in general, because a concussion can be as small of a thing as getting your bell rung, as they call it, and you know, maybe you get a little dizzy, a little blurred spots in your eyes, and you're fine and you can stay in. You know, you're not knocked out, you're not kind of, you know, walking around funny, you're fine. That's still a concussion. It's just an unregistered one. And I think that players on the line have had an uncountable amount of those. I can't remember how many games I've had where I've gotten my bell rung, you know, disoriented for a few seconds and then kind of snapped back in. I've had a couple major registered concussions, but I've had a ton of the unregistered bell rung kind of a thing. So it's very real. It's more real than people want to admit, and especially on the offensive line where it's consistent hits like a boxer, you know?
Yeah, you don't get a playoff ever.
Mm-mm. And people are, you know, the thing that really stuck with me when it came down to the health issues was I don't remember exactly where I heard it, but someone was saying it's not the big hits. It's not the, you know, the big collisions you see the safeties and wide receivers doing. You know, those are bad and they take their toll. And obviously if you pile them up, it's not good, but it's the consistent ones. It's the consistent hits to the head. And that's, to me, that's offensive line play. That's offensive defensive line play.
This is On Point. I'm John Harwood, in for Tom Ashbrook. We're hearing one professional football player's story about life after the NFL. I'm talking with John Moffitt, an offensive lineman for the Denver Broncos and other teams, before he abruptly retired last year, midway through his third season in the NFL. John Moffitt, stand by. I want to bring in another voice, that of your father. David Moffitt joins us now from Guilford, Connecticut. David Moffitt, welcome to the show.
Hey, John, how you doing?
Good.
And the other John.
Hey, Dad.
Keep Dave, it clean now because your dad's on.
Okay? Yeah.
Yeah, right?
He'll behave. David, let me just start by asking you, when you heard your son was stepping away from football, what was your reaction?
Well, the immediate one was kind of a little surprise because John announced it on Twitter and, you know, in the past, pretty much everything he's gone through, we've kind of talked about before the fact.
You mean he told his Twitter followers before he told his dad?
Yeah, kind of, yes. You know, we had inclinations, but not real, you know, facts. So, but that being said, after the initial shock, I mean, I was happy for John because he wanted to go another direction, and the main thing, like I heard you guys talking before, he was out of harm's way. And that's a big point with a dad, to watch football the whole time. You enjoy it, but you're always a play away from what's going to go on, you know, what could happen.
David, did you enjoy watching your son develop into a star football player and enjoy seeing him make it in the NFL? And was there some sense at some level of disappointment on your part that he was leaving that very, very special life?
No, I didn't. The first part of the question, I enjoyed it thoroughly. But I told John when he was a young guy, actually just in youth football, I said, you play this game for yourself, nobody else. If you don't love it, don't play it. And, you know, it came to fruition. He came to the point he didn't love it, he stopped playing it. It wasn't for me. And I loved every minute of it, and he taught me something. Enjoy every second, nothing's given. And I enjoyed everything. We went to the Rose Bowl. We played on different pro teams. I mean, I enjoyed it thoroughly. And when it was done, it's done. That's it.
John, let me ask you this related to what I just asked your dad. Jill on Facebook sent in the following comment. What I wish is that those mothers hoping that their child, quote, makes it, actually understand the dangers to their little boys. Would they still sacrifice them to a dream of a better life spent taking potentially deadly hits to their brains? So, John, what would you say to other parents out there as well as young kids thinking about playing football?
Yeah, I think that's a really excellent point because the fact of the matter is that this is information that people need to know, that people need to have about football so they can make an informed decision because that's really where we need to be at the game. And I think that's what the NFL needs to do is a new more of a new era of honesty about the dangers of the game and just put it out there on the table. It's a great game. Everyone loves the game, but it's a dangerous game. And this are the effects of hits to the head. These are the effects of concussions. I think what goes along to admitting that, much like tobacco, the New York Times this week just had an article on the front page comparing football to the tobacco industry. The dangers of admitting the dangers of the game for the NFL is that you have to, on the back end, pay retired vets. And I think that's something that they're struggling with right now. But it really does come down to kids giving parents the right to an informed decision and not blurring or muddying the issue of potential CTE or brain damage because of blows to the head, even at the youth age.
John, every time they make a rule change, let's say to protect a quarterback from hits, for example, or defenseless receivers, you hear former players who are commentators say, oh, the game's for sissies now. It's not the same as it used to be. I wonder, as someone who's been right in there, if you believe it's possible to change the NFL to preserve football as it is, but to make it either much safer or just safe, period.
I think that's impossible, personally. And the first thing, I think, no matter what, the game today is as fast and violent as it's ever been. And for players, ex-players to say that, I feel that a lot of ex-players like to take on an attitude that's very concurrent with the NFL attitude because they are reps of the NFL now. And that's why I feel like there hasn't been enough of a voice about these issues as well as for veteran players. But the game is violent. And to me, you should just acknowledge it and we should just be honest about it. And the people who play the game make a sacrifice and they take a risk. And that's appreciated and they're taken care of because of it. You know, their families are taken care of because of it. And I think if we're just honest about it, we can still enjoy the game and not have this, you know, elephant in the room on Sundays.
David, your son is 28 years old right now. He's played football for a lot of years. I've got a 25-year-old daughter. And it would be heartbreaking for me to think about 10 years from now, she might have difficulty walking up and down the steps. Are you worried about John from that standpoint, that he's going to have chronic physical problems that won't get better?
You worry about it. Sure. So far, so good. But, you know, it's some of that stuff does not come out right away. So
I can still kick his John, and I'll be able to do it for the next 10 years.
Recently.
I believe that. But John, let me ask you, do you think that that you have pain right now that you accept will never go away? And do you think it's going to, as you become a parent and raise kids, are you concerned that you won't be able to physically be all there in the way that, you know, we see stories of former players who have real serious problems?
Well, first of all, John, you know, easy with the parent and the raising kids stuff. I'm still young. I'm not even sure if I'm going to go that route. I might just be, you know,
Fair enough. Free bird for
the rest of my life. But, you know, like my knee will never be the same. My shoulder, my pec, some major injuries I sustained over my playing career. You kind of just accept it's, you deal with it. There's pain. That's it. I think I got out early enough. And I think that I'll be okay in the long run. As far as the head trauma goes, you just don't know. There's not enough science there yet, as far as CTE research goes, to really outline all of the symptoms and to really understand the disease yet. That's why I think it's such a shame that players are getting locked into this concussion agreement right now, this settlement right now, ex-players, because the CTE research isn't even close to being done yet. So that's up in the air, and we'll see. But I try to stay as healthy as possible now and just live life.
Let's go to the phones. We've got a call from Green Bay, Wisconsin. John's on the line. John, welcome to On Point. Go right ahead.
Thank you for taking my call. John, a great Badger fan calling, and I love...
Go Badgers!
I love Wisconsin. I hope your Wisconsin experience was a good one. My question is, when you made your decision, what kind of reaction did you get from your pro teammates and Badger teammates and coaches?
First of all, I loved Wisconsin, and I can't wait. I hope one day I can live there again because it's just one of my favorite parts of the country. It was, like my dad mentioned, I kind of put it out on Twitter and things, and it was just a decision. It was such a major decision in my life that and I felt like I really already knew the answer, that I just didn't want to talk about it. And that was really rare of me, and probably why, parents were concerned. But a lot of people across the board were concerned because it really was an out of the blue, just, decision. And a lot of my alumni friends and Badger coaches reached out and asked if I was okay. And I said yes. And I've been back since. And, people understand once they hear the story, which is nice. And the people that love you and care about you still love you and care about you.
John, Michael Jordan retired and came back a couple of times. Any thought in your mind that you take a year, you take 2 years, and then maybe you come back and try it again?
No. And a lot of people have brought it up to me. I've obviously thought at points, okay, do you really want to be there? Is this what you really want? And the answer has always been yes. So I am honest with myself and ask myself the question. I'm not afraid to. But I really see that chapter in my life as being closed, and I really look forward to, exploring the things that I've never gotten to explore because I had so much dedication towards the game.
All right, let's take another call. We've got Maria on the line from Miami, Florida. Maria, welcome to the show. Go ahead.
Hi, John. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. My comment is I danced 20 years of my life, and I joined a professional company, Miami City Ballet, and I felt the same way you did. In other words, throughout my career, it was a beautiful thing, and it was working towards something, but when you start getting paid for what you love, it's a different feeling, and I kind of lost that passion because not even the applause was something. It was just a matter of performing and the applause, and you go home and you do it again the next day and the next day and the day, next day. So some of that beauty went away, and I just wanted to let you know, I think you have a lot of courage. I did the same thing in the middle of the third season. I said, this is it, and I made a good decision because my life has been beautiful. I stayed in the career of dance, but I have now 4 dance studios, and my passion is in the world in a different area, but it's beautiful.
Maria, thanks so much for your call. John Moffitt, can an offensive guard identify with a professional ballerina?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes I feel like I was a ballerina out there. I move pretty well. I definitely identify with what she's saying. I think she really hears in my story, can identify because she pretty much described the exact same feeling, obviously just different.
Now, she talked about the influence of the money. By playing even as long as you did in the NFL, did you make enough money that you were able to put a lot aside and be well set for a while, or is that not how it goes for a very young player?
I put enough away that I'm good, that I have time right now to make decisions about my future and what I want to do with a career. But I'm by no means am I wealthy. I had a $2.9 million contract. I walked away from $1 million, taxes take half. You have fees, you have life expenses. So I socked away as much as I could while enjoying life and living and doing things and traveling. And, now it's just a new chapter. I'm lucky enough to have time to decide, what I want to do with life.
David, do you get to see him more now that he's not playing professional football?
Yep, and we talk more. We don't talk, you know, like we used to talk a lot more frequently, but now we talk more, you know, like a couple hours condensed and you know, once a week. But I get to see him, you know, like we never saw him on a holiday in how many years? I mean, the whole time he played football, really, except we went out there once, but you don't really get to see football players during the holidays. So it's, you know, he's coming home for these holidays, and, you know, it's just the relationship has changed, and it's in a really good way.
John, let me ask you, all of the space that was taken up in your life by travel, by practice, by games, by all of the discipline required to sustain yourself as a professional athlete, how did you fill that void once you quit? Because I imagine it's a pretty, mighty big void, and I understand there have been some ups and downs in that process.
Yeah, I think that, you know, when I quit, the biggest shock was just, one, I was so elated, and two was I had so much free time. And I was exploring a lot of different things with radio and film and things I was interested in, but it was still a lot of time compared to football. So I definitely filled it up and partied, and I went out and I traveled across the country and I had a lot of fun, but I think it really
partied a little too much. You got in a little trouble.
And the balance was hard for me to maintain. You know what I mean? It was really, the balance was given to me in football. After football left, it was kind of like a balance I had to find.
And do you think that you have found it?
I do. I made the decision. I don't drink anymore. And really changed my life and changed the way I live my life and the choices I make as far as that. And really walked away from the party lifestyle I had embraced so much in college in the NFL.
Now, I understand that part of your roadmap going forward involves a little stand-up comedy, performance, yeah. Entertainment. Tell me about what your dreams are and what you hope to do.
Yeah, well, so I right after football ended, I got into radio and I was doing a lot of radio and I also have a real fascination for film and I've been working with people on doing some short films, but I met up, I got to meet documentary filmmaker Sean Pamphilon. He did Run Ricky Run for the 30 for 30 and we kind of documented a lot of my transition because we're like, well, it's a unique story. It's a unique experience in your life. Let's just take the year and we'll do interviews throughout.
Wait, do I hear a reality show coming?
No. I don't want to do a, it was like a, so we basically documented it throughout the year and it was a turbulent year, a lot of ups and downs, a lot of personal experience. And part of the idea is, to deliver some of it through comedy, to narrate some of the stuff that we shot, of just what I went through the past year. We thought the cool focus was a lot of people talk about an NFL player's transition in life after the NFL, and 80% are divorced and broke and all these things. And so we decided to explore it because I had consciously chosen to leave the NFL.
John, it seems to me you've got pretty good radar because last year at different points, training camp and in the fall, you played with both and protected both Russell Wilson and Peyton Manning. The guys who faced off in the Super Bowl, who's going to be in the Super Bowl this year and who's going to win?
I haven't been watching enough football to give a great prediction, but I'm going to go with Denver. And I don't think the Hawks are going back to the Super Bowl this year. I think after this year they might, but I think Denver could get back for sure. I'm not sure.
What's it like playing with Peyton Manning and have him yell Omaha at you over and over and over?
it was an experience, you know. It was something that I probably didn't value as much because my heart was out of the game. But Peyton is, to watch him work in person is a really impressive thing. He's one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. So,
John, you stay right there. David Moffitt, thanks so much for joining us. I'm John Harwood in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. This is On Point. I'm John Harwood, in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about the NFL and life after football with former player John Moffitt. He's the former Seattle Seahawk and Denver Bronco. Last year, he retired from the NFL midway through his third season. I want to start this segment, John, by playing a clip of the general manager of the Seattle Seahawks speaking about you in 2011 when they were preparing to pick you to improve their offensive line.
The whole offensive staff, Coach Carroll, everybody was really excited about John. Again, trying to add that toughness to our offensive line. You're going to hear us talk about it a lot over the next several years. Actually, both sides of the ball, our whole football team, the competitiveness and the attitude and aggressiveness, and John's going to be a big part of that from a leadership standpoint.
Toughness and leadership, John Moffitt. I'd like you to talk about those qualities and evaluate Roger Goodell, the commissioner of the NFL, on how he has responded to a whole range of challenges the NFL has been facing the last couple of years.
Okay, that's a big one. as far as the toughness and leadership aspect, I mean, I think people assume that when you quit the game or you leave the NFL like I did, something must have been missing, you know, and I must not have been that good. I must not have been that worthy of the NFL, because no one just leaves the NFL. And I was a good player. I played hard. I loved the game. I played passionately, and I took pride in being. I went to the University of Wisconsin, and it's a hard-nosed, run-the-ball, pro-style offense, and offensive linemen from there are tough guys. And so that's kind of I embrace that. As far as leadership in the NFL, I think Roger Goodell hasn't done the best job, because there is really a big double standard. I believe there's a lot that he has known about that he hasn't led on to. And I'm talking about the concussions and the CTE findings. But
and
I think
you're not
biggest,
talking there about the domestic violence stuff, because we got
that he did that. I believe he did, too. But I think that's minor stuff. I think that's just like one of the symptoms of the main issue is that this is how they approach it. It's
what is your reaction to the issue of violence against women on the part of some players? And is that a big problem? Is that a football problem, a societal problem? What?
That's my thing. And this is kind of what I was going to go off with Roger Goodell, is that there's no voice in the NFL. There's no real advocates for the players. So the players are just, I feel like they're run amok. I feel like things can just get easily shuffled onto them and thrown onto them. The issue of domestic violence, is it an issue that occurs in the NFL? Yes. Is it an NFL issue? No, not by and large, not in the statistics and the numbers. So for it to just be, thrown onto players' shoulders to now be advocates of something that's just a problem that came up as a way of, some PR cleanup, I just don't think that's right. I think what the NFL needs is real advocacy, real players addressing real issues that matter to them. I'll let you go.
No, we've got a caller on the line. Ronald's calling from Augusta, Georgia. Ronald, welcome to the show. Go ahead.
Hi, John. How are you doing today, sir?
Good.
I played football, minor league football, after high school for 10 years. I played arena football. My son has played football for the past 4 years. He is 11 years old. He's never had a concussion. We checked mouthpieces. I've coached for 3 of those 4 years. They just won their county championship this past week in Kershaw County, South Carolina. But my big thing is everybody's talking about these advocacies and all this stuff with the domestic violence, the concussions and all that. Since day one of football, all that has been taught to the people who are playing that football. Just because you get a buttload of money, that doesn't mean that you're now exempt from following the basic rules. It's just like when you're in high school, you're a leader. You're not, you're in the spotlight already. If you're going to go out there and punch a woman, or you're going to do this or that, you need to be 86 right off the bat. You're part of a team, and you are a leader. You're a leader in the spotlight. You're a leader in kids' eyes. You're a leader in your team's eyes. You're a leader in the NFL's eyes. And advocacy, that's just, to me, that sounds like you're just trying to put the responsibility off on somebody else.
John Moffitt, go ahead. Ronald, thanks for your call.
I think that's an interesting perspective. I think that's the perspective a lot of football fans take. But being a leader, to me, is talking honestly and the way that you feel, not talking what culture says you should do or what society says you should do based on an issue or a problem. The thing that always bothered me about the outlook of NFL players is, oh, they get all this money and you know, they have all this entitlement and they're in the spotlight. So, you know, they don't have the right to mess up. They don't have the right to make a mistake. And at the end of the day, the only difference maybe between an athlete or and anyone else is that they get paid for playing the sport, and everyone makes mistakes. That's just part of being a human being.
John, let me ask you about the Jonathan Martin case in Miami, Richie Incognito. What was your reaction to that?
I thought it was I thought it was not good, obviously. I thought that Incognito was way out of line. I look at it as we're professionals. I think there's a locker room culture where you can have fun with guys, but at the end of the day, I think you draw the line with, you know, respect and respect for a man and who he is and vice versa, mutual respect. And I think that was violated there.
Is that something that happens a lot, or it struck a lot of people, I think, watching that as, wait a minute, Jonathan Martin's an awfully big dude. He can take care of himself. But on the other hand, these are people who don't experience that culture.
Yeah, I mean, not necessarily in my experience. Does that happen? Has that happened a lot? Luckily, I was in great locker rooms. And it really is up to the veterans when you're a rookie, and especially a rookie offensive lineman, to set the standard. When I was a rookie, I had Robert Gallery. And, you know, we had responsibilities. We had rookie responsibilities. There was stuff we had to buy and little things like that just to show that, you know, you're going along with it. But never anything compared to the Jonathan Martin, Richie Incognito situation, which was just, you know, really appalling. That was right when I retired.
John, who are your best friends in pro football who you stay in touch with and maybe played with?
Max Unger and Breno Giacomini. Breno's now with the Jets. Max is the center for Seattle. Walter Thurman, I actually just talked to him a night or two ago. He's with the Giants. So still in touch with a few guys and still have some good connections and friends in the NFL.
And do you find yourself paying close attention to Badger football, or are you, once you leave the game, do you not even care to watch the game?
Haven't been watching too much of the game, but I do keep up on the Badgers. I'll always be a fan.
Tell me what is the immediate horizon for you in terms of jobs?
Right now, I've just been kind of writing a lot about my my experiences in the NFL and kind of my take
book coming
on what's going on. I don't know. Just really letting myself write and write honestly.
John Moffitt, former offensive lineman for the Seattle Seahawks and Denver Broncos, thanks so much for joining us, and good luck to you going forward.
Thank you.
Now, in a moment, the new all-female sports show. This is On Point. Men have long dominated professional sports and sports journalism. Now CBS is trying to change that. This fall, the network launched the new, first nationally televised primetime all-female show, We Need to Talk. Andrea Kramer is one of the panelists, and she's our panelist today. She joins us from Marblehead, Massachusetts. Andrea Kramer, welcome back to On Point.
Hi, John. How are you doing?
Doing great. Tell me about your show, and what is the message that you and your colleagues on the show are trying to deliver, and who's the audience?
Well, that's three questions there. Let's see. There is no message to be delivered. The bottom line is, as you sort of alluded to, the pantheon of sports television and sports talk is not solely manned by men. Myself, my girlfriends have, in and out of the business, have talked sports for decades, and now you guys just get to hear about it. I certainly think that our vast array of panelists are, you've got them from journalism backgrounds, from professional sports backgrounds, from the executive branch of teams and leagues. and we certainly have a different, more informed perspective. I've always liked to say, John, that I find many shows, particularly football pregame shows, to be networks of screaming men. And you can rest assured that that is not what you are seeing on We Need to Talk.
Andrea, are you thinking of your audience as women who love sports, or is it women who may be marginally attached to sports but have other people in their lives who are into it?
John, what makes you think it's only women?
It doesn't have to be. You tell me.
Exactly. I think that our audience is men. I think it's women. I think that there's a whole nother generation of younger women who they actually want to hear what their peers have to say. I mean, a lot of times people gravitate towards their own, right? And I certainly think that there are a lot of young women who are quite knowledgeable about sports. I mean, you know, it used to be, hey, let's grab some of the guys and let's go out and drink some beers and watch the games on, you name it now. We could do it Thursday. You could do it Sunday. You could do it Monday. But there's plenty of women that are out there doing the same thing. I think they're the audience. I think that older people are the audience, older generation of women. And I think there's men that are watching too. Because, again, I think that you don't, I've always sort of joked, does he really know what he's talking about? Or he's just yelling, so it sounds like he must know what he's talking about. I just think that you have a lot of informed opinion. Certainly, we try to push the stories forward, not just that's part of kind of our the bar that we set for ourselves. What can we say that you're not hearing elsewhere? What can we enlighten you about that you haven't heard on some other show?
All right, let's give our listeners a little taste of the show. Last week, We Need to talked about Minnesota Vikings running back Adrian Peterson, whether he should be reinstated from the NFL's exempt list after pleading no contest to reckless assault. Panelist Summer Sanders said this.
I do believe in due process. I trust the courts. And I do believe that Roger Goodell is below those courts. So he should do his job. He should be reinstated and he should play. But most importantly, personally, as a parent, I hope that he and a lot of other parents out there take another look and reevaluate the way they're disciplining their children. And that's it.
Now, Andrea, that surprises me. I might have expected that the first all-female talk show would take a harder line toward the issues posed by the Adrian Peterson case.
Well, I think that everybody has their different opinions. I mean, you've got a rotating cast of 12 women, John. And each week, each Tuesday night, there's four different women that are on the show, and they bring different experiences. Some of us are parents. Some of us, are not, and it certainly gives you a different view on things. But again, that's how Summer Sanders felt. I think that when we had our debut show, I think everybody, for the most part, we came down pretty hard on the issues that were plaguing the NFL, but not because we're women, but because this happened to be our informed perspective.
Do you think that Peterson should be reinstated?
I think that he made an agreement with the National Football League, and the agreement stated that he would go on the commissioner's exempt list until his case was adjudicated. The case was adjudicated, and now he is ready to come back, and now I feel that he should be subject to the personal conduct policy, which he hasn't been subject to yet. He was on the commissioner's exempt list, which is different, and I do feel that he should be subject to the personal conduct policy. Now, that policy is currently in flux. It's all part and parcel of the Ray Rice fallout, the Adrian Peterson fallout, Greg Hardy. All of these issues that have plagued the league have put Roger Goodell and the 32 owners in a position where they need to rethink the commissioner's role. They need to rethink how players should be subject to discipline, both under a domestic violence policy as well as a separate personal conduct policy.
Andrea, John on Facebook sent the following comment. I want to ask you about it. I see Amy Trask is on the new show. We Need to Talk. They highlight her time on the NFL Security Committee. Isn't that the same one that mishandled the Ray Rice case, presumably involved in the Ben Roethlisberger case as well? How do you deal with issues of conflict and people being too close to events to comment on them in what we would think of as an objective way?
Well, Amy Trask doesn't work for the National Football League anymore. She spent 26 years at the Raiders, and when she was there, she was on certain committees. But she doesn't work for the league anymore, so she's not defending the league in any capacity. If anything, if she's talking about her perspective on, you know, as being a member of the security committee, it's information that that it's an, again, informed perspective that she can bring to the situation. I mean, I believe that one of the things that she talked about was that Jeff Miller, who is in charge of security for the National Football League, she talked about how she knew him on a personal and professional level, and how she felt that affected some of the things that he potentially might be accused of doing. So there's nobody on the show that is a defender or an apologist for any league or team. I mean, you've got a current WNBA player in Swin Cash, and I believe that if she felt that she had something strong to say about the NBA or the WNBA, I don't think that she would shirk from saying that, offering that opinion.
Andrea, good luck on the show. Thanks so much for being with us. Andrea Kramer is co-host of the new all-female CBS Sports Network show, We Need to Talk. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, John.
You can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. And you can follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Coming up tomorrow, a conversation with an Orthodox Jewish scholar and a former Catholic priest turned writer about why Jesus' Jewish roots matter. I'm John Harwood, in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point.